Thank you, and thanks everyone for joining. As Jesse said, I will talk about testing gravity with galaxy surveys. So one of the big legacy from the past century on modern cosmology is our nice picture of the universe, the expanding universe with matter fluctuation that were produced during cosmic inflation and that grew all over the story of the universe to form the large-scale structures that we see today. And one big achievement in the past decade was to measure very precisely the temperature and polarization cosmic microwave background power spectrum, especially from the Planck satellite, which is kind of our reference on the cosmological parameters. And that is the state of cosmology today with a very precise measurement of the cosmological parameters in the Lambda CDM model. And now in these coming decades, we are trying to answer some very big and specific questions, like what is causing the acceleration of the expansion of the universe? What is dark matter? Did cosmic inflation happen? What is the mass of neutrinos? And other questions. And we try to answer this by mapping the recent universe and also trying to detect the B-mode of the cosmic microwave background polarization. And one question that I'm focusing on and I will talk about in this talk is that we can also challenge general relativity on cosmic scales because gravity is the main force at work on cosmological scales. And why do we want to do this? There are many ways to extend general relativity. And an alternative to GR could explain the cause of cosmic acceleration as an alternative to dark energy. Another interesting application of an alternative of GR is to explain this S8 tension, which is a difference in the measurement of this parameter S8, which is a combination of sigma 8 and omega m, two cosmological parameters defining the growth of structures. And there has been a consistent lower measurement of S8 by weak lensing survey compared to cosmic microwave background measurements. And also, which I think is a very exciting question, is that general relativity is very well constrained on solar system scale locally. And now we are able to test it more and more precisely on cosmological scales. And the universe is a perfect laboratory to test gravity because gravity impacts the evolution of matter distribution in the universe, and it impacts the path of light coming from faraway galaxies. And here is an example of a simulation of the cosmic web, the large-scale structures, and you can see how a modification to gravity would give very different features of the matter density. And cosmology is also a unique test of gravity in a regime that's different from gravitational waves. But as most of matter is dark matter in the universe, we have to find some ways to probe this matter evolution. So we use galaxy images from data from galaxy surveys, because in this case, we can use galaxies either as tracers of the dark matter large-scale structures. As in here, the galaxies are forming in this like cocoon of dark matter. And we can also use galaxies as background lights, as is shown here on the left, where the dark matter will cause distortion of the image of galaxies. And using both those properties, we can statistically probe the matter power spectrum, which is here, I'm showing the matter power spectrum evolution as a function of redshift. And that's what we're trying to access through these observables.
There's a question.
Yeah. Is there a question on Zoom? Can you speak up?
There. Okay.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, some people characterize the situation you've been describing as a kind of crisis for general relativity and quantum theory and the things that we know. Do you?
Sorry, can you repeat it again? Quantum theory.
Yes. So, for example, there was an editorial in the New York Times Sunday making the case that there is a real crisis in our knowledge of cosmology, and things like the Kabul scale not resolving, a number of other things they mentioned. And some people seem to be at the point of calling this a crisis, which needs us to do different kinds of crisis management. And other people think the situation is just fine, basically. And we should continue science as we go.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the main kind of thing I'm focusing on. But indeed, I think that's something I want to convey, is that with cosmology now, because we'll have access to this data from galaxy surveys, we'll be able to address many different questions and do consistency tests between different probes, which hopefully will kind of convince us of our confidence in the standard model of cosmology.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. So one specific statistics that we can measure from this distortion of the, like, the impact of the modification on the geodesics is cosmic shear. So galaxies are weakly lensed by this large scale structure on the line of sight between us and faraway galaxies. So the geodesics are modified by this gravitational lensing, and that means that we get shapes of galaxies that appear more elliptical in a coherent way. And we summarize this effect in the two-point correlation function. So we correlate the shape of galaxies as a function of their distance, angular distance in the sky. So we have these two statistics, xi plus and xi minus, which are shown here as an example at the bottom of this slide. And so so we do this correlation in different bins of redshift. So we have tomographic cosmic shear, and that helps us directly probe the matter power spectrum and matter distribution evolution. And to fully unlock the information from the large scale structures and weak gravitational lensing, we combine cosmic shear with other statistics. The clustering, which is the correlation of the positions of galaxies as a function of angular distance in the sky. So that's using galaxies as tracers of dark matter. And here we have access to the matter distribution, but with a factor of the galaxy bias, which is the relation between dark matter and galaxies. So we are sensitive, the clustering is sensitive to the bias square. And we also use the galaxy-galaxy lensing, which is the tangential shear around galaxies between us and background galaxies. And this is sensitive to the one factor of the bias and times the matter power spectrum. And the combination of all this correlation function is called the 3x2 points. And it's especially sensitive to S8, this combination of sigma 8 and omega m, dark energy and gravity, because it's probing the growth of large scale structures. And to kind of give like a historical context for weak lensing survey, there has been a lot of effort to detect statistical signals. And cosmic shear was first measured in 2000. So that's actually a very recent measurement. And since then, there has been surveys are becoming bigger and bigger, and we are now mapping like 10% of the sky with stage 3 surveys. And now we're entering the decade of stage 4 surveys, where we are mapping half or all the sky and sometimes from space to get more resolution on the image of galaxies. But for now, I'm going to focus on the dark energy survey in which Jesse and Jack are also involved. So the dark energy survey, they build specifically a camera, the DCAM, to put on the Blanco 4 meter in Chile. It was made of 74 CCDs, and the particularity was its large field of view, so that we were able to map 10% of the sky between 2013 and 2019 in 5 optical bands. And we are a large international collaboration, working from the instrument to the cosmological analysis. And we specifically work on cosmology from different probes like supernovae and BAO to have access to the expansion of the universe and the measurement of these 3x2 points, and also clusters of galaxies to have access to the growth of structures. So I was specifically involved in the observing campaign for 2 weeks, which was really fantastic to be able to go to Chile and observe with this massive telescope. I've also contributed to the pipeline. I co-led the extension analysis team with Jesse, and I've been also a convener of the theory and combined probe working group that oversees this kind of beyond lambda CDM studies and combination with CMB data as well. And we are now working on the 6 years, the full DES survey cosmological analysis. To kind of summarize like the big challenges we have to face when we do cosmology from weak gravitational lensing, we have first to measure the shape of galaxies precisely. We also have to estimate the redshift of galaxies. And in this case, we kind of assign galaxies to a specific bin in redshift. We also have simulation to validate our measurements and our approach. And we also have to build the data vector, so the measurements of the two-point correlation function. And we have to model it accurately to do the likelihood analysis. And that's what I'm going to focus on now. So one thing that that galaxy surveys allow us to do is to test gravity. And I'm specifically interested in this approach where we parameterize the metric perturbation. So the question we are trying to ask is, are modifications to the potential that's causing weak gravitational lensing as expected as in GR? So the metric is basically perturbed by gravitational potential caused by the dark matter structures. And this is deviation from GR are parameterized by this parameter sigma naught, which modifies the geodesics. And sigma naught is zero in GR. And we also modify the dynamics of matter by this parameter mu naught. And mu naught is zero in GR. And here on the bottom, this is an example of how cosmic shear is impacted by sigma naught. So higher value of sigma naught means a stronger gravity. So we have more lensing, so a higher amplitude of the cosmic shear. So we set out with Jesse to do a test of beyond lambda CDM models with DES 3x2 point data. So we put together the DES extension analysis team with many people, including many early Kaya scientists. And we considered various different extensions to the lambda CDM model, with, of course, a time-dependent dark energy equation of states, the kind of common W0WA parametrization, which is a way to test if dark energy is really a cosmological constant. We also test for spatial curvature for sterile neutrinos as a potential candidate for dark matter. We tested for the growth of structures as sigma 8 as a function of redshift. And we did tests of gravity. And these results are published in this paper. Yeah.
So Jack Halvin-Pulley is now in Washington.
Yes, this is outdated. I wanted to say that. I was not a postdoc anymore, but yes, indeed. Thank you. Yes.
Pablo is now in Montreal as well. This parameterization with sigma and mu, are those motivated by a specific theory, or is it like common aspects of a bunch of different modified theories that give you these different parameters?
Yeah, so some kind of motivation was to have a parameterization that's linked directly to observables, so directly to the weak gravitational lensing and to gross measurements. And there are ways to relate that to specific modified gravity theories, and that's that in some specific papers that explain it. But I can show at the, well, let me see if I can show it right now. Here. So you see here in this paper, they show sigma and mu, and how, for instance, the Horn-Desky models map into this sigma mu plane. And you also see that sigma equal to mu means something specific regarding weak equivalence principle. So there are ways to relate to modified gravity theories. But as like an observational cosmologist, it's also like a generic way to test any modification, any deviation from GR. And I also wanted to point out that to me, that's also especially a very like attractive way to test gravity, because it's probably one of the only way to test the lensing part, because all modified gravity theories, they will modify the growth, but not necessarily the lensing kernel. So this sigma mu, this sigma not parameter in particular, is very interesting to me to test lensing consistency.
And just to follow up on that, so in this parameterization, are sigma and mu assumed to be scale independent?
Yes. So
time independent?
Yeah. So here I simplified. So sigma and mu, they are function of time and scale. And you can pick any. That the drawback of this is that it's completely unconstrained. Like you can choose any parameterization you want. And what we did and what I've done in the past, and so maybe that's why we kind of chose that, is only a time dependence. So as omega lambda. So that's to say we expect a deviation from GR to still reproduce the background evolution that we see now with dark energy. So we have sigma and mu that switch on as the acceleration of the expansion switches on. So the idea is to try to probe as an alternative to dark energy. But we can pick different scale and time dependence, and I will come back to that later. And sigma and mu, not that's the value of sigma and mu today. And the other motivation is that we don't have the constraining power yet to like do, you know, like, I don't know, like to constrain 10 parameters. Like if we wanted to do three like redshift bins and like constrain the amplitude in different redshift bins, we don't have the sensitivity to do that yet. So we keep that as a way to still explain the acceleration of the expansion as a generic test.
Just to have some numbers in my head. So what sort of what's an effective scale that dominates maybe the constraints on the mu sigma?
Yes. So here you kind of see as that's cosmic shear as a function of the angular scales that we. This mostly impacts the large angular scales, which is a difference compared to modified gravity theories that will impact more the smaller scales. And I will come back to that as well, but this is mostly defined on linear scales. So it's really with the large scales that we're mostly considering large scales when we do that.
Okay, so like hundreds of megaparsecs or gigaparsecs?
Yes, yeah, hundreds of megaparsecs, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the general approach that we did in the extension kind of project is to do a Bayesian analysis where we sample the likelihood to compare the data vector to our model, taking into account the covariance on the data. So to sample the likelihood, we actually use the Cosmosis software, which is a parameter estimation code that does the modeling of the data vector. And we used the Polycord sampler, which is an alternative to, for instance, Metropolis Hastings or Multinest. And this was a lot of work that also Jesse and I worked on, where we compared different samplers and we showed this Polycord was the most robust one. And we basically have our Lambda CDM analysis and we fit for this additional parameters from this extension to Lambda CDM. We used a lot of computer power. I don't want to compute the carbon footprint out of that, but we have run around like 700 chains on high performance computing systems. So we used the 3 years of observation from DES, which are very precise measurements of the 3x2 point statistics. And this is the most precise weak lensing measurement to date because the source galaxies is the largest shape catalog to date with 100 million galaxies. And we use lens galaxies that were optimized to constrain the dark energy equation of state with high precision. And for some reasons, we used 4 redshift bins for this lens galaxy sample when we do the clustering and galaxy-galaxy lensing statistics computation. And as a result of many years of effort from many people, we obtained a cosmology with 4% precision, which is represented here with the matter fluctuation sigma 8 and matter energy density omega m in purple compared to the results from the cosmic microwave background measured by Planck. Okay, and so most of our work was to model that. This should be pointing to M, which is the model for the 3x2 point statistics. And now we have to ensure that we have an accurate modeling of this data vector in beyond lambda CDM models. And most of my work was to do this modeling for the test of gravity for sigma mu. So the idea is to propagate the lensing and matter power spectra down to 3x2 points in sigma mu. And we have to consistently model intrinsic alignment, galaxy bias, and diverse observational effects. And actually, in one of my previous papers, I've shown that intrinsic alignment is one of the most important systematics to take into account in sigma mu constraints. So the intrinsic alignment is the fact that galaxies forming in the same gravitational potential will tend to align, so that will give that will produce like a fake cosmic shear signal. And so of course that depends on gravity, so you have to take into account in your modeling. And actually in this analysis we considered this an intrinsic alignment model that's called the nonlinear model, which is a way to describe this intrinsic alignment as a function of the matter power spectrum with an amplitude and a redshift dependence. And we also do, in DS, we have an approach to remove data points where we don't trust our model. So in particular, for instance, on small angular scales, we are sensitive to the distribution of baryons, which is not very well understood, actually. We can, you know, we are made of baryons, but we actually don't really understand how they are distributed on small cosmological scales because of the baryonic feedback from supernovae and AGN. So where we don't trust it, we remove data points. And I'm going to specifically talk about also the non-linear power spectrum. And why did this analysis, you know, take a long time and so much resources? It's because we want to make sure that any deviation from lambda CDM we see is not caused by systematics that we know of. So we have a blinded analysis where we never look at the final constraints on the extended parameters until we are 100% sure that if we see a deviation, it's not due to a mismodeling or to some observational systematics.
Can I ask something like,
yeah.
So these constraints are marginalized over the galaxy bias parameters, right?
Yes.
Is there some easy way to understand why this is not degenerate with the galaxy bias? Yeah. I would have thought that, so the sigma and the mu, you know, that's the relationship between the matter density and the lensing potentials, right?
For sigma specifically, so sigma is not sensitive to the galaxy bias because that is directly linked to the weak gravitational lensing. It modifies the lensing, basically. The galaxy bias will impact the clustering. So that would impact mu because mu is sensitive to mu, it's basically what says how matter reacts to gravity. So in the most degenerate. So
lensing is measuring, you know, like the combination of phi and psi. Right?
So sorry, here, yes, phi is a combination of small phi and psi.
Oh, so your phi and psi are not the usual Newtonian
potentials? No, I mean, yeah, this one is little phi plus psi. Yeah, you're right.
Oh.
That's a vial potential.
Like 8 instead of 4. Okay, I was wondering.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So lensing is only measuring this phi. And then how is psi constrained then?
I'll come back to that. Yes.
Okay.
And I'll come to that just in a slide. But yes, indeed. Weak lensing is sensitive to sigma naught mostly.
Okay, good. And so on the right hand side, rho delta means the matter over density.
Yes.
So you measure the galaxy over density, which means that there's a bias. And so then, like normally, I mean naively, I would have thought that there is then some degeneracy between bias and sigma, but there's not. You're saying?
Yeah, there isn't, because here actually the rho delta is the rho delta that we measure from cosmic shear, which is directly sensitive to the matter power spectrum without the bias, just the matter power spectrum.
Oh, to get
the cosmic
rho from the lensing, don't you then have to assume GR? Or sorry, maybe I'm missing something.
Maybe another way to phrase it is cosmic shear is linked to the convergence power spectrum, which is linked to the matter power spectrum. And what we are modifying with sigma naught is the lensing kernel. So how this matter power spectrum maps into the convergence power spectrum. And with cosmic shear, you measure background galaxies, you correlate the shape of background galaxies. And that's how you're sensitive to the matter along the line of sight. You're sensitive to the matter power spectrum in between. You don't have to assume any galaxy bias models.
Maybe something that's just useful to emphasize that everything's modeled to and compared to data at the level of these two-point correlation functions. So there's not any, this isn't based on some reconstruction of specific phases of matter over densities. And so when you're modeling the shear two-point correlation function, you need the matter power spectrum, which does depend on mu, and then the lensing kernel, which depends on the sigma naught, but there's no galaxy bias that shows up into that. Whereas when you're modeling the galaxy clustering, you get a factor of mu and galaxy bias. So I think it's just the fact that there's these three different correlation functions together, they just have slightly different dependencies on bias and mu naught. Or like maybe bias and mu naught are fairly degenerate, but we don't constrain mu.
Yes, I was going to say, so cosmic shear is slightly sensitive to mu through the matter power spectrum, but as we will... Well, I didn't show results yet.
Oh, sorry.
So this was an example for... That was forecast with the previous kind of data sets. That was maybe optimistic.
Why would the contours close?
So actually, in this case, okay, I don't remember exactly, but actually when you look at the widths on mu knots, it's actually kind of very extended compared to sigma knots.
Do you remember what your prior range was?
It's -3.3.
Okay, so you're like so the closing is just the prior, I see, okay.
Well, it is closing, but it's still not as sensitive as when you look at sigma node. And I think I was maybe including, I would need to go back, I was maybe including other data sets in this. So this was assuming we fixed some systematics in our modeling. Does that clarify things?
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I will. Maybe, hopefully, it will also be clearer afterwards. So one kind of like the main limitation to our analysis is, again, as we were saying before, the sigma mu parameterization is defined on linear scales. And so at some point, the evolution of matter density becomes nonlinear because like weird things happen on smaller scales, basically. And this is described in general using n-body simulation, which assume lambda CDM. So we don't have good simulation to describe the nonlinear evolution for modified gravity. Actually, now we have more and more, but not exactly for sigma mu. So the approach that we take follows what was done in previous Planck analysis, is to compute this delta chi-square comparing a nonlinear computation of the 3/2 point and the linear modeling, and minimizing this delta chi-square, removing data points until it's below one. And when we do this approach, we end up keeping only 255 data points compared to more than 400 in lambda CDM. So we cut the number of data points by 50%, and you see here on the right the data point in red, which are the ones that are left in the analysis. So in addition to the DS 3/2 point measurement, which will mainly constrain sigma nodes, we also use measurements from Ricci space distortion, which is really sensitive to the growth of structures and therefore sensitive to mu nodes. Yes?
Good question. I guess it's related to previous discussion. So for your bias, what sort of time dependence do you assume for your bias, for the galaxy bias?
Yeah, so actually, okay, so in this case, we use a linear galaxy bias that is, we model it as like a free parameter in each redshift bin.
And how many redshift bins did you have?
So this was 4 redshift bins.
Every redshift bin.
Yeah. And there is only like a very slight evolution with redshift. But I guess Jack can tell you more about this as well. And so that's for mu naught. And we also, so we use EBOS results so we use EBOS measurements of this growth rate times sigma h, which is like a derived parameter that EBOS measures, and we use that to constrain mu naught. And then we also use the cosmic microwave background temperature and polarization power spectra from the Planck satellite. And that's sensitive to both sigma naught and mu naught through the ISW effect and the lensing of the cosmic microwave background. So these are the results that we obtained on sigma naught and mu naught. So here, pay attention to this blue contour, which corresponds to DSCS3. And so we have kind of a measurement of sigma naught, which is consistent with general relativity, sigma naught of 0. And you see here in green results from the Ricci space distortion. And you actually see that it's slightly negative mu naught. And you see that it doesn't constrain sigma naught. And we combine everything in this purple, in this purple contour. So one key kind of point from this analysis is that we are mainly limited by these scale cuts that we do to remove the nonlinear scales. It would be great if people could, you know, use our results if they want to compare with like other data, other models, and everything is available at this webpage.
Sorry, can you clarify? So it says that the Planck data prefers sigma naught, which is different from 0 at 2 sigma.
Yes, exactly. So I looked again at the Planck 2018 paper, and you actually never see a sigma naught mu naught plot. So that's actually kind of the first time we see that. But it was kind of known, but this is actually very clearly shown. They have sigma naught constraints, but not really like the 2D plane.
And this almost looks like it's a 3 sigma away from the...
Yes.
And it's known, it's inside the Planck paper somewhere, but...
Yes, it's in a table like the constraint sigma mu using also weak lensing BAO RSTs.
Maybe
related
to something else
This is only using the temperature and polarization power spectra from Planck, which we know Planck has inconsistency between the CMB lensing and this like more primary power spectra. And so this is basically, this.
The A lens thing, sorry, go ahead.
So basically, and yes, I think maybe it should be clarified more, but in Planck, that was one of the thing is like when you look at the power the angular power spectra of temperature and polarization, at high L, those power spectra are lensed, and this lensing of the primordial power spectra is inconsistent with the CMB lensing that you reconstruct from the polarization. You can directly measure the power spectrum of the gravitational potential, and those two are kind of inconsistent. And yeah.
Smearing, you're saying up the bumps and
yes.
The 2-point function.
Yes.
Okay.
2-point versus 4-point. Yes.
But the S8 or the sigma 8, I thought, determined directly from the 4-point function. I thought that like was like bang on the sigma 8 from the primaries. No?
So from the 4-point, from the 4-point, it's more consistent with lambda CDM from just the 2-point. And so actually, in the Planck 2015 paper, they also looked at sigma mu varying this A lens parameter. That's kind of a way to describe this mismatch between the lensing of the primary and the direct lensing like reconstruction. And of course,
changing like gravity affects like the lensing from the 2-point versus the 4-point. I mean, like, you know, right? That tension just says that there's something weird in the Planck data, right? As opposed to
Agree. I agree with that. Yes, I think it's very interesting, and we should look more into it. Yeah. Definitely. And
here, this Planck result is just the 2-point.
There is no lensing in this. Yeah.
Okay. There is no 4-point.
Yes, that's just 2-point. Yeah. Yes.
Is there angle lines on the?
Yeah, so here actually our modeling pipeline it fails in this kind of region. So we kind of decided to remove this region because otherwise the Bayesian analysis, like the parameter estimation, was getting lost there, and we were losing a lot of computing time just being around here, where it doesn't have any, like it breaks some of the equations. No, it's something else directly, like in the equations that are solved in the Boltzmann codes it's kind of has some, it's not well defined at some point in this region. So yeah, it's kind of a problem, but actually not too much here because we are not hitting this prior, especially when we're combining everything together. Yeah, so I also forgot to say the way we are modeling the matter power spectrum in the sigma mu is and the lensing power spectrum is by using MGCAM as an alternative to CAM, and that's where this fails. So here we are also showing in the paper, trying to answer this, can deviation from GR explain the S8 tension, which is this tension between weak gravitational lensing in blue from DES and Planck measurements in red. And because we make some modeling assumptions that are quite different from lambda CDM, we also have to take that into account. And so the S8 constraint from sigma mu are shown here at the bottom. And it's kind of hard to tell anything because there's so much, like the error bars are getting so large. So I'm also interested in further testing gravity, so either by looking at scale-dependent sigma mu, which I've worked with a student a few years ago, and we added this model that was proposed in a paper. So we added that to MGCAM to be able to predict the 3x2 points in this kind of scale-dependent sigma and mu model. And I'm also interested in other time dependence of sigma mu and other theories of gravity that are pretty standard, like F of R gravity or the Dilaton model. So that's one of the things I'm going to work on, that I'm working on, and we're hopefully going to make a push of it this week when working with Jesse. So we saw this weird, like, think about Planck being away from zero. So I kind of, for the past few years, I really wanted to be able to measure sigma mu from the CMB lensing directly. Like, because for now, every time we quote CMB lensing, we're quoting the Planck satellite measurement of CMB lensing. But we are measuring CMB lensing better and better. So indeed, the cosmic microwave background is lensed by the large-scale structures. And here is a map of the gravitational potential, the integrated matter distribution along the line of sight down to the CMB measured by Planck. And here on the right, I'm showing the gravitational lensing potential power spectrum as a with sigma naught varying. So that was done by one of my other students, where you see how sigma naught changes the amplitudes of the gravitational lensing power spectrum and also the peak of this lensing. And recently, the ACT collaboration released a new cosmological constraints from their lensing power spectrum measurements, which are 43 sigma measurements of CMB lensing. So ACT is a telescope in Chile. And here are the results that were published with results from ACT in red. So the question now is, can we measure sigma mu using this newest data so that we can have a consistent, constraints on sigma naught from Planck lensing, ACT lensing, and other CMB lensing experiments. So I've worked over this summer with another student, David Zinjeleski, and he worked on redoing the analysis using this Cosmosis software, which is a parameter estimation code, using a module that was added to do the likelihood, the ACT likelihood. And he validated this pipeline that is different from what was used in the ACT cosmology paper. And again, because CMB lensing is not as sensitive to nonlinear scales as with weak gravitational lensing, because we're sensitive to higher redshift, but we are still sensitive to nonlinear scales. So we do have to do the same kind of approach by removing scales where the nonlinearities are impacting the power spectrum the most. So he did this the same approach minimizing the delta chi-square, and he ended up removing these two data points here. So the main data point he's using from ACT are the ones in green. The ones in gray were already removed in the Lambda CDM ACT analysis. So this is the first time I'm showing this result, and they are very preliminary. But this is what we end up with. Again, we see measurements of high sigma knots from ACT lensing data. So again, this is ongoing work, but it's still very intriguing. And when we combine with RST, this comes back to GR. So I think this is kind of exciting, especially in the context of cosmological experiment like Simon's Observatory and CMB-S4 that will measure the CMB lensing with even greater precision in parallel to doing sigma mu constraints with LSST and Euclid using the 3x2 point data.
Sorry, question. This is independent of Planck, right?
Yes.
So can you combine the Planck or have you combined it?
Yes, so that's something we are working on. So combining with Planck lensing for point function and also combining with Planck primordial anisotropies. Yeah. And actually, it comes back closer to GR, which is something we need to understand more. But
the Planck two-point function had a similar anomaly, right? That one we were discussing.
Yes, but smaller. It was kind of lower.
Lower value.
Yeah.
But then the Planck four-point function, is, I guess, is consistent with GR.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't show it, but we have that as well, yes. Okay, so for now, from weak gravitational lensing, we have not detected any deviation from GR, but with the LSST from the Rubin Observatory, I've shown that we can expect one order of magnitude increase on this sensitivity to sigma mu, which is very exciting, although this was quite optimistic. And that's thanks to more fraction of the sky mapped, more galaxies measured. So I now work with the Rubin Observatory, which will map the entire southern sky every 3 nights, and it will produce a galaxy survey LSST that will have two main scions doing the cosmology from the galaxy survey, so again, measuring 3x2 points, supernovae, BAO, etc. And also, we'll be sensitive to changing phenomena, the transient sky, because we will be able to map very quickly the same part of the sky. And we'll be able to measure solar system body, asteroids, AGN, etc. So just a quick note that the Rubin Observatory is a US and Chilean project. And they are science collaboration, international science collaboration, that are focusing on the science with LSST data. There is different interface between the project and this science collaboration. And there are also contribution from the international community to the Rubin project, including Canada through computing resources and software contribution. And that's one part of my work at Slack is to kind of, I'm in the team managing this contribution. So this is showing some pictures I've taken when I got to the summit in Chile, where you can see the observatory is almost finished. And we see here the telescope on the right. So this telescope mount assembly is moving. It has a mirror cell on the telescope right now and a commissioning camera on the telescope now. And we are actually taking data using the software at the summit, but using another telescope that just the hill next to it, which is Oxtel. So the Rubin Observatory will use the LSST cam, which is being built at SLAC right now. It's the largest digital camera ever built with 189 CCDs. They are all assembled with the lens and filters, which you can see on the right. It's amazing to see in person because like this is like my size. It's really gigantic. And they are doing the last test before shipping it to the summit later this year. And another part of my work is to actually work closer to the data and work on the pipeline to correct the detector effects. And here, this is to show the incredible amount of data that we expect per night. And that will be a real challenge where we expect terabytes of data per night. And with the ability to detect in just 1 minute if there is anything that has changed to be able to detect transient objects. So I'm going to quickly mention one aspect of like this increase of volume of data from all of these galaxy surveys, and how will we organize our efforts given the large theory space, for instance, like gravity theories. So right now, I feel like a few models are preferred by the community, and that's mainly because of theoretical motivation or preference from people. And I'm proposing that we can use machine learning to kind of help us organize our efforts by looking at how different theories impact observables. So instead of looking at, you know, motivated by the different theories, we can look at how they compare on the observables. If two theories have the same impact, maybe it's not worth looking at both of them. So the idea here is to build self-organizing map to kind of put together models that have the same impacts on observables, or basically map the different impacts on a 2D map. So I'm going to skip this, but this is just to show that this is an example of a self-organizing map using cosmic shear as an observable for different modified gravity theories. And we've shown in my paper that dark energies, like a dynamical dark energy, has a different impact on cosmic shear than modified gravity theories. So this is showing we absolutely have to do both dark energy and modified gravity search with like LSST or Euclid. So I'm going to finish here by saying I will be visiting Jesse all this week, and we're going to work on different things, DS-related DS-related. And I also wanted to quickly mention that I'm also very interested in outreach, and I've been kind of trying online content creation around science and climate change by filming and editing my own video, which has been interesting, and I'm still working on that. It's my creative channel at the moment. So to summarize, we have very intriguing results on test of gravity, and one of the biggest challenges right now is to model accurately observables to be able to do this test. And machine learning can be used for theory exploration, and this kind of results that we got showed they're very rich, an example of a synergy between the cosmological surveys as we will have in the coming decades. So I think it's a very exciting time where we'll be able to test gravity with even greater and greater precision. Thanks a lot for listening.
Hello. Oh. Can I ask a question?
Okay, sounds good.
John Moffat, the latest data for the upper constant tension shows that it's now a serious tension problem for nitrocedium. And your lensing data, DES, etc., constrain in any way possible solutions for the lambda-CDM, the upper tension, upper constant tension problem.
Sorry, you're referring to the Hubble tension, is that right? Did I understand?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, so the Hubble tension is more related to supernovae, BAO, like things that are sensitive to the expansion of the universe. And it's true that actually you can make some combination of GS with other observables to kind of constrain H-knots, and there are papers about that. But in our constraints, it is something interesting to look at, but in here, we are mostly interested in the growth of structures. So we're kind of, that's why we've been kind of disconnected to H-knot. We are focusing more on the S8 tension, which is more about the growth. But yeah, we are not very sensitive to the Hubble parameter, and that's why we haven't been focusing on it. But I think that's a good question to keep in mind for LSST, for instance, because we'll be starting to be sensitive to the Hubble parameter more than now. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yes.
So, I was wondering, so when you're removing these 200 points from the DES analysis, mm-hmm. How sensitive is that removal to the assumed redshift distribution?
So maybe showing this helps, because so this is showing all the correlation function for increasing redshift bins. That's a good question, because you would expect to be more sensitive to linear scales at, well, no, it's not exactly right. But here, yeah, you see, this is for higher redshift bin, we remove more than for closer redshift bins. So it is kind of a balance between the signal-to-noise ratio we have in redshift bins and how, you know, like the sensitivity to the, like the, where the lensing channel is peaking, like which redshift it's peaking.
You mean the higher redshift ones have lower error bars?
It's actually more in the middle range that we have the highest signal-to-noise ratio. But it's true. I mean, this is a good point, because I think we remove the data points starting from, I think, from like the highest redshift bins, but instead we could start from the highest signal to, or the lowest signal-to-noise ratio. That's a good point, actually.
I guess I'm also curious about, so this removal assumes some mapping between K and angle.
Right, yes.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the redshift distribution. So if the redshift distribution is catastrophically wrong, then you may spuriously be including small scales.
I see, yes. Yeah, no, we assume a mapping like in lambda CDM, but adding sigma mu. So like we're doing these scale cuts from the real space, not from like a K space. So we already do the mapping. But that's an interesting point, yeah.
And this comparison between like what the impact of nonlinear calculations on linear is with at a fiducial point in parameter space with a fiducial assumption of the redshift distribution. So yeah, like
that's right.
Dramatically wrong. You might be losing the points you don't need to, or keeping the points you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a nice test to do.
I have the question.
Yes.
What data cuts do you impose on the MetaPower spectrum? You mentioned that you impose some data cuts, and does it mean that you impose the Dirac data cuts on the MetaPower spectrum itself?
Sorry, I didn't hear super well. Did you say cuts on the MetaPower spectrum?
Did you impose cuts on MetaPower spectrum itself, right?
Yes.
I mean, to expel nonlinearities.
I guess we could do it as well, but I.
Or you just impose it on the angular correlation function.
So
because you have angular correlation function, and you can impose linear cuts on it, or you can impose also on the MetaPower spectrum itself.
Yeah, that is true. We could impose on the MetaPower spectrum itself, but this way, we are more able, like this way, we look, we directly look at the impacts on, like, the mapping of the matter power spectrum on this free space correlation function. So we.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. But what is what and how much this cut is in matter power spectrum? I'm just curious. Not on the angle, but on the matter power spectrum.
So I guess it again it depends on the redshift, but we haven't done this, like the conversion in terms of the k space. But I mean this here shows an example of.
No, the like, power spectrum is defined in Fourier space. So it, yes, it's like 0.7, right?
Yeah, or like 0.1.
No.
Yeah.
But why it keeps the same for all redshifts, or it shifted? I just didn't notice. I mean, does you change k max for a different redshift, or you keep it the same?
It's the equivalent of doing a k max for different redshifts. What we're doing is, I think, would be the equivalent of a different k max for different redshift bins.
So use different. Okay, but if you rescale to okay, I see. Because I'm just curious, what is the value of Kmax for the redshift equals zero for the present time?
Yeah, we don't have that, but that's
okay. I see. Okay, and also okay.
What?
There's a radius in real space that you're cutting at, right?
Well, we're looking at this. Not really in, it's not like a rate, like in the Lambda CDM analysis, yes, we do, like 8 megaparsecs, that's already a scale cut that's imposed. But in here, we don't do like this physically motivated cuts in radius or K, but just like we look at the impact directly on the data vector. But you could choose to do that.
There's some angle that you're cutting at for each redshift, and that angle for each redshift corresponds to some
radius. Yeah.
That's the question, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. My question is just about because you need to convolve matter power spectrum with kernels, right? And I'm asking whether until each k you calculate this integral. That was my question.
Yeah, but that's
It's not about the precise the
yes,
cut
yes.
and the angle of correlation function. Relate each other, yeah.
When we do the computation, I think we go up to like a few hundred, k of a few hundred.
Okay.
Because
and
we want to have like we want to have an accurate kind of modeling of the 2-point correlation function. So we want the full like power spectrum. Down to
but you don't know the model of the matter power spectrum.
Yes, we assume Hello fits as the non-linear power spectrum. Yeah, sorry, that.
I see.
Yeah.
May I?
Yeah, and then the cut-through.
I think.
Sensitive to
may I?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a larger problem in what you've been just discussing, which is that there's a degeneracy in any of these theories between changing the initial data and changing the law. So when you talk about looking at the effect of modified gravity theories of a certain form, you also could keep the modified theory fixed and modify instead the initial data.
Yes,
and
yes.
This, or you could investigate the hypothesis that a number of people have investigated, that the laws change, that at the cosmological scale, what you're considering as fundamental parameters are actually fields. And that's something a number of us have investigated. So it seems to me, well, I'm just curious if you agree with that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we kind of are building from the Lambda CDM analysis, and that's why we take this approach. But yeah, you can also do this differently at the field level instead. Yeah.
And also, you can do this in the machine learning context.
I think just looking at the time and realizing that the wall clock is
sure, I'm done.
We might continue this discussion. discussion over lunch, or we can follow up, and Anya's has some space in her calendar.
Sure.
Yeah, great.
Later on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.